Welcome to Ever Beyond. On Wolf Spirit Radio, everbeyondradio.com, Tiernasau from Ireland, ScottishSovereignsOnTheLand.ning.com. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond. Welcome to Ever Beyond on Wolf Spirit Radio. Let's see if I can handle this. Let's see if I can bring in Tiernasau. And yes, welcome to Tiernasau in Ireland, as well as Wolf Spirit Radio, Ever Beyond Radio, and whoever else might be listening in. We are a subscriber-supported station. If you can click on the archive, subscribe for $5 a month. You can download as much as you can. We've got some great archives. So, on with tonight's show. So, I'm sure many of you are very familiar with my musings on the last in the last few months regarding the massive projects in Nazi Germany, which created super weapons, crazy science, space travel, time travel, dimensional travel, all kinds of weird and perhaps not so wonderful things that were done. You know, as I always say, you know, what could be worse than a Nazi with time travel? Anyway. So, to that end, I'm going to bring in another expert in the field. You may not regard yourself as an expert, but, everybody's an expert in themselves. So, everybody's their own expert. And if you're standing in a field, well, you're an expert in the field. So, anyway, having backpedaled, let's press on forward. Tonight, my guest is Brett Colin Shepherd. I'd like to welcome you and bring you straight in. Hello, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm very well. So, the internet is nice and calm. Sometimes it's a bit like a sea, you know, and it's a bit like rough, and people are skipping. But most of the day, people have been very sharp and clear on the show. So let's accept that as a gift from the heavens, and we'll move on. First of all, where are you speaking from, Brett?
I am speaking from Texarkana, Texas. It is east of Houston.
Texarkana. I thought that was like a made-up thing that was like something about Texas. But no, it's called it's a place called Texarkana.
Oh, yes. It's right on the border of Texas, Arkansas, and Louisiana. So.
Oh, right. So they called it off. How very constructed. Well, there we go. It must be a nice and warm. Is it there at the moment, or did you have that rain stuff?
It is frighteningly warm for an Irish person, yes.
Oh, my God, an Irishman. Yeah. All right. Well, I know about Irishmen. I live in Scotland, as you know, and we have a lot of these kind of pale blue people wandering around.
Well, yeah, you came from the underworld, so I would imagine that's the case, you know.
So, indeed. Yeah, so it's really good to have you. Now, I've seen some of your stuff. It's kind of right up my street, as they say. What did I say? Well, how do you say it? Is it down your alley, up your alley? No, up your alley sounds terrible. Yeah.
It sounds, any way you put it, that sounds nice.
Yeah, yeah. So, let's get into it. What brought you, you grew up as a regular American kid, presumably. What got you interested in the Nazis?
There was absolutely nothing normal about my upbringing whatsoever. I studied the occult arts when I was very young. I was trained in them.
You were trained?
My mother was was a practicing witch with the Hermetic Order.
All right. So you didn't have to. The trouble with a lot of people is the trouble of belief in the magical process.
A lot of it, you know, that a lot of it was somewhat of a perversion on the goddess, you know.
Yeah. Would you say that? Let's not put any judgment on it, but it wasn't what you saw that there were flaws in it. Let's put it that way. Religion.
Like all belief systems, I found that the hierarchy was the flaw, you know, the hierarchy system.
Yeah, so, probably, like, if you were to grow up as a Catholic kid or a Jewish kid, as I grew up as both, again, you see the flaws in it because you're coming in from a perspective that is not indoctrinated in that way. So you've got your own sort of cosmic perspective as you come in.
Right, exactly right. I was trained to work puzzles, you know, because I had a photographic memory.
That's very useful. I always wished I could have one of those.
It's really a curse, because you remember absolutely everything, and others deny it or they don't remember at all, you know.
Well, yeah, I have the same thing with my girlfriend. I don't know if that's the same, but anyway.
Yeah, it's very much the same.
isn't that amazing? I say, hey, do you remember what you said last week? They didn't know. But like, well, 6 months ago, right, you said to so-and-so, you said this. Excuse me. You can't remember what you said yesterday, but you can remember that. All right, very good, very selective. Anyway, so, sorry. Darling, sweetheart. It's relationships are easily demonstrable of the issues we have between humans. So... having been trained, so you've got the photographic memory. Did that come genetically? Is that like something that your mum had or your dad had?
I'm not sure exactly why that is. I was born with it. You know, I didn't see the world the same as other children. You know, I was very incredibly artistic and creative and. I was getting basically light information from an early age, you know, basically from the universe, and I was just I would draw pictures all the time of what I see out there in space, and you know, of course, people thought that was kind of crazy, you know, what do you mean there's people there? There's people on the moon, and there's people, you know, on different star systems and whatnot, you know, it was a very crazy way to grow up, you know, in such a patriarchal type system, you know, where you go to school and you have to get in line and all this jazz, you know. I didn't understand those things, and a lot of that was just a facade, because, you know, my double life, when I would be at home, you know, they were giving me books on hermeticism and different occult philosophies, you know, going all the way back to Blavatsky and all that, you know. So I'm very familiar with the way this German stuff started, you know, and the technology that derived from it. And there were a couple of scientists that came from Germany that did in fact say that it was the occult knowledge and the technology that they developed were from extraterrestrials. And I believe that because of things that have happened to me when I was younger. When I was 15, SRI contacted me in my classroom. It was late in the day. I had an art class at the end of the day. And my art teacher picked me to stay after class to see some information that this lady had. Her name was Amina Zarita. She had slide after slide. She had hours of slides that she showed me. Of different, what I came to realize later were lunar anomalies and Mars anomalies. These things are all of the things that I found 40 years later.
So, all right, so let's just break a few of those things, because that was a very interesting account there, Brett. You were visited in your school.
Yes.
Now, did you grow up near a military base?
Yes, I already knew that I was part of that, you know, part of some kind of program, you know. So I was aware of that.
All right. So do you remember being taken? Have you been? Do you have memories that were, you know, you say you've got photographic
yes.
memory, but what about things when you, you know, have you had your, the white flash machine, you know, the flash machine, the flash gun?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I've had that sort of, everything after that felt like a deja vu. It felt like I had already seen it before it happens, you know? So my whole life after that was exactly that way. So I would see something a couple minutes in advance, you know, always. And it would seem always familiar to me. I've already done this, you know.
So not only did you see it a couple of minutes in advance, but you also, like, were remembering that that's what you've already seen.
Yeah.
Wow. So
yes, I'm already remembering that. Yeah.
So how do you square that? I mean, if you were to say, like, okay, so there's no, let's forget anything that anybody's ever told us about how science real works and time works on, you know, from our Newtonian, Einsteinian perspective. You're talking about as if you've viewed your entire life first and then run through it with a little, it's almost like you've got the script in your hand and you look at the script and then it happens out. It's like you're, that's like playing out a script.
Yes, that's how it feels. That's exactly how it feels. And, you know, I may be able to attribute a lot of that to early programming, but some of that I just can't explain. It seems like it's almost extraterrestrial. And when I was younger, you know, I was very small child, you know, I remember going to the moon.
Okay, so let's talk about the moon. Because the moon, I mean, this is one of your main, your earlier threads when I'm looking at your stuff. And like you said, you're looking at the Lars, the lunar anomalies.
Yes.
Right, I've got a whole load of beef about the moon, right? You know, the whole thing about...
Oh, I bet you do.
Yeah. The whole thing about the moon kind of spinning round once a month, you know, that's a parked ship, right? So the moon is the wrong place. It's all, you know, everything's too perfect about it. It's known to be hollow. It's known to be kind of not a living planet, as if it has ever been one. I mean, I've spoken a few times with Emily Craig, and we were looking at, yeah, you're right, that's a machine. That's a big, you know, I can see seams and welds where it's been put together like an enormous football. You know,
yeah, I can't really speak to that. I haven't seen that because I was on the surface, you know. At least it seemed as though it was a dream or something, but I think later on I realized that, yeah, I was in fact there because of what I'm finding on the moon, you know.
Okay, so...
I'm seeing a lot of different images. I've seen all of the moon, lunar images that have been put out by NASA, every single one of them. The images, I've also seen the ones that they burned. I saw those when I was 15 years old.
Now, and these are the ones that the woman took.
To put it mildly, they archived the large images that were many, many pixels, you know, 13,000 or so pixels large. And they printed these, you know, from prints or whatever, from negatives, rather. And they scanned the big prints at a resolution of about 13,000 or so. And one of these was given to me that was actually taken out of the bin that was headed for the incinerator. Now, I can't really say who gave that to me, but it is somebody legitimate, and they worked with these types of images. This image is of Apollo 12, and you can actually, you know, see the background of the image. It doesn't look all black and matte black like all of the ones that were put out to the public. There are structures back there. There's what looks like a big parabolic dish with a antenna in the middle, and that's behind the LEM. And, you know, that at least I know I can prove, but I looked closely at the high-resolution one. I would have said, okay, fine, but this person actually sent me the higher-resolution one, you know, to prove that it's legitimate or whatever. And I looked in the corner of it, and I saw this radio tower. And I said, I've seen that before. That's the one of the pictures that I saw when I was 15. So I must have seen and gone through and seen also some of the ones that were incinerated and then archived by NASA. It was that is their standard. That's what they do. They archive the negatives. They do not give those to the public.
When you say archive, you mean they hide them away,
and then they
only supply really blurry images, even though they've got mega million-pound equipment to take really sharp photos. They send us these fuzzy things.
That's exactly right. The blurring happens because of the JPEG compression. They reduce them by almost less than half, and that's why when you zoom in on anything, it looks blurry. It's also coming from the Hasselblad camera, depending on where its f-stop is, like f-stop 22 or f-22, and around the middle of the image, it'll be clear, and the background will be blurry, and the foreground will be, clearish. But in this particular image, the astronaut is actually fuzzy in the foreground, and the LEM in the background is in pretty good detail for that type of camera. You know, so their goal was to get the background in really high resolution.
So that was I want to throw some curveball in there. We've been talking about, or I've been listening to Jay Widener talking about Stanley Kubrick and his relationship with the moon landings and the photographs. And there's this set of photographs, this one reel that's supposed to come off the moon that is like picture after picture of perfectly focused foreground and background photos that are obviously, you know, double it and back projected and everything.
Those were most likely done in a studio, you know. Everything that they put out to the public is either half true, the image as far as images go, half true or completely false, you know. So it's basic propaganda, you know. They had to really hit it home that they went to the moon, and they couldn't rely on some of these blurry images that they actually took on the moon, you know. And there are some. This Apollo 12 image is actually of the moon. It's real.
Yeah, and the thing about these things is the you can understand why they would do that. Because it's bravado, it's pride, it's like, well, you know, we need to, it's good PR. That's basically what it is, isn't it? Because it's really about distracting everybody by saying, oh, look at these, you know, we're getting these marvelous images from the moon. Look how clever we are. Look at this, look up there, look at the moon, look at the moon, look at the moon. Don't look at what we're doing with the banks.
It's actually the propaganda is actually paid for by Americans. They're paying for their own lie that they're given, you know. This particular lie was unnecessary, but it was necessary to the military-industrial complex if they're trying to cover up their actual technology that they used to go to the moon, because they didn't use rockets.
No, because guests that I've had on have described in some good details about gravity generation. One of the things that I was told was that yes, we went to the moon, but no, we didn't blast off with the rocket. It wasn't a rocket that took the lunar module off the floor. Even if, I mean, there is that famous film of the lunar module taking off, blasting into space, and it's perfectly tracked.
Yes, absolutely.
It's perfectly tracked, as if there was a camera operator going, okay, now they're going up, I'm just going to... beautifully. I mean, it was like a proper camera operator, like, that's not real.
It just looks like something out of Thunderbirds, you know.
Yeah, exactly. They use rockets, you know, the fuel or whatever, you know. There's so much propaganda about that because our economy is based on fuel, you know. So they used the fuel rockets to say, you know, yes, we need this, you know. This is American and all that jazz. But rockets to the military-industrial complex, I assure you, are completely expendable. They just blew one up, and SpaceX blew one up in Cape Canaveral just recently. And I knew they were going to do that. That was a Department of Defense weapons testing. And they just blew it up, you know, because they're testing weapons, you know. They don't want the public to know that they're testing weapons. They have a large amount of SpaceX rockets ready to go up for them to blow up.
So essentially, the rocketry program is just an extension of the military missiles, and there's not much different between a military missile. I mean, imagine putting a bomb on a Saturn V.
Yeah, it's some kind of weapons testing in defense of possible nuclear weapons that could come into our space or asteroids or something like that. It's the new thing that they NASA asked for money for Congress or whatever, and they said, "Well, can you hit an asteroid if it comes into our orbit or whatever?" And they said, "No." And you know, Congress is like, "Well, why should we give you $18 billion a year?"
Well, that's because it's not NASA that has the technology that can destroy an asteroid. Anyway, because there's so much more going on, isn't there? I mean,
that money is actually being utilized by the secret space program, and they have weapons and vehicles and every spaceships that we couldn't fathom. I've seen them with my own eyes. You know, I've seen them flying. I've seen them doing reconnaissance at 3 in the morning, you know, down Highway 10 near Phoenix, you know. I've seen these ships, and they're not UFOs to me.
No.
But they are based on extraterrestrial technology.
So, here's the thing. You're looking up in the sky, and you see what you realize later, or maybe now, you know, can recognize immediately, is a military UFO. Can you, I mean, in the same way that I can tell you if a Honda CX-500 is coming down the road towards me. I used to ride motorbikes with bikers, and we would play games. You say, "Oh, who's coming?" "Oh, yeah, that's Buzz. He's on a CX-500. You know, so you can learn to recognize characteristics of, you know, the way the sound of the engine. Obviously, these things are not so sound, but you know they have a characteristic, no sound whatsoever. They have a signature, though. Is there right. some way that you can say that's one of ours? That's a GX-15. It's not easy to tell between them because they're
really,
using.
Actually, it's irrelevant at this point. As far advanced as we've become in secret, the public is not advanced. We're living in the dark ages compared to the military-industrial complex. But these people are in contact with extraterrestrial beings that are just like us. In fact, they're cousins in a way. You know, no, exactly in a way. You know, they are our cousins. They look like us for the most part. Some of them are a lot paler, you know, because they're, you know, not in the sun. They're not on Earth. And
you mean they're Scottish? They're from Scotland?
Yeah, basically they look very Nordic. Absolutely.
Yeah, I imagine, because, you know, we're adapted to less light and less heat, so you learn to, you know, your skin does different things.
Yeah, most of these beings that are in communication with our military and are helping them with technologies are apparently they're from Sirius B, not Sirius A, Sirius B. And the old German technology was based on a race that they said was from Aldebaran, but it's conjecture because it was, you know, it's a communication from mediums and whatnot, from the Vril Society.
Oh, yes. I actually I have a particular thing about the Vrildarman.
Maria Orsic. Oh, yeah. My gosh. Yeah.
Well, you know, I actually have a German girlfriend who's got hair down to her waist, but anyway. And she's very psychic and says she's from Sirius D. Long story. So Aldebaran. Or Aldebaran, and the Sumi, and Sumeria. Hang on a second.
Okay.
Hang on a second. Question from the chat room, before we move away from that subject to deeper, was from Dolly in the chat room. So how did they get to the moon if it wasn't through regular rocketry?
Well, the Germans had went after the war, after World War II, the German scientists were taken over in Project Paperclip along with their technology, and it was developed. So they did have anti-gravity spacecraft all the way back in the 40s. And they had since developed them well into the 60s, and they were much better then. You know, as far as technology goes, they were much more farther advanced at that period of time, and so it was time for them to go. You know, they could do that. The thing is that there are beings on the moon. You know, so when they got to the moon, they found out that yes, they're in fact beings with bigger spacecraft, and they're staring at them. You know, there was a lunar base there. And there's a couple that NASA, or not even whistleblowers will say, but I'll say it, are on the near side of the moon with big parabolic dishes. And they are, I guess, communicating with Earth, or, you know, sending light information. I am not sure what the purpose is, but they have these big things. And, yes, they used the German... Hanabus and Vrilcraft to fly around the United States, and when people saw a UFO or a flying saucer, it was usually a German Vrilcraft or a Hanabu type craft. It was to cover up the technology that they had attained from long ago from extraterrestrial medium sources.
Okay, so that's how they got to the moon, right?
Yes.
So let's now back to where we were, and we were talking about Aldebaran.
Yes.
And the Vrildarman. Now, one of the things the Vrildarman are the most mysterious. A side note about the Nazis is it's well known that the Nazi modus operandi, the MO, is to dig until they found the information that they need and then kill you. I mean,
right.
That's a standard operating practice.
Yeah, the people in these secret societies in particular, some were Rosicrucian from the Templars order. These are really old orders, Order of Teutons in 1912, you know, that Rudolf von Sebendorf is a German occultist. He belonged to that order and founded the Thule Society, which was the predecessor of the Vril Society. And so we had these Knights of Malta type Rosicrucians in there as well, with their influence from Turkey. And Turkey, you know, as far as like if you're an Aryan type race, not in a derogatory way, but you know, a white person or whatever, you know, you are probably descended from a source from the Black Sea, from Turkey, after the flood and all that jazz. So these things are, the German occultists knew about this. They knew about their Indian influences and all that. They sought refuge underground for some reason. And this was probably because of the sun. So they developed this Black Sun Society, when it came these are some of the philosophical ideas that came from this Theosophy Society that Helen Blavatsky.
Helena Blavatsky and Alice Bailey and Ledbetter.
Gotta love her, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Helen Blavatsky. I mean,
yeah,
she's a pin-up like Barbara Bush. Anyway,
yes.
I mean,
yes,
she was a genius somehow.
Very Romanian, and yes. she had read, you know, the Dacia Prehistorica by Nicolae Dinsenziano, and she knew about their ancient history, you know, that was hidden by the Romans, and this ancient history goes way back, where they were worshiping, you know, Poseidon and different gods and goddesses. They had Zeus and all the same things that later became the Greek mythology. This was pretty much their pantheon, you know, in ancient Romania. So she was coming from that school of thought, and also they had a Russian magician, you know, as well as the real girls I believe it was Hess that was kind of overseeing them from the Nazi side.
What was the Russian magician called?
The Russian magician. Gosh, I will get that to you later. I forget.
Okay. Interesting.
I'm not really sure, but I think it's... no? Yeah, I'll get that to you.
Okay. So, we're talking about 1910, 12, 14, that sort of time, about 100 years ago from now?
Yes, that's 1910, you know. So it was very early on when they were developing these philosophies before there was a Nazi party, really, you know. This Nazi party or this socialist party came out basically was kind of helped along by Eckhart, who was the mentor of Adolf Hitler and so forth. And he was basically a Zionist, you know, deep in Jesuit, deep into the Catholic Church thing, you know. And a lot of people don't realize that in Munich, you know, it was predominantly Roman Catholic or Catholic. And Hitler had to gain a lot of favor, you know, with the Catholics of Munich, you know, because he was giving his speeches there and so on. Munich was sort of a central point of East and West Germany. So he was there giving his speeches, and he learned his mannerisms and everything, like Mussolini. He did it just like him, you know. He spoke you know, with that enthusiasm, with breaks, and you know, he was an excellent speaker, an excellent actor, actually. Hitler was basically a failed artist. He had always wanted to be an artist and philosopher, and he was very deep into the occult. You know, when he wrote Mein Kampf, it was a lot of his ideas were inspired by Helena Blavatsky and the Theosophy Society, Theosophical Society.
So this is, and here's one of the things that not a lot of people get.
Yeah.
And why it's so easy to fall prey to what is indeed a dark cult that oversweeps a whole country or a whole region. I mean, it was bigger than, like you're saying. Actually, let's just go back there, because apparently there's stories, right? Bulgaria and Romania, and we're just starting to discover this. And, you know, my girlfriend and we're looking at this sort of area, because that's where everything was. And I came up with the idea that, you know, who is it? Hannibal. And she was saying, oh, well, Hannibal, why did Hannibal take all these elephants and go all the way around the back and come back come from the, what is it, the northeast towards Rome? And how did he get all those elephants around? I thought, all right, well, there's a very simple answer to that, that the elephants didn't come from Africa, that they were actually in Bulgaria.
That's
because
correct.
They'd survived the Ice Age. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. He was probably riding mastodons.
He must have gone.
So, I know. That must have been a really frightening sight, you know, Hannibal coming in on mastodons with, you know, feathers or whatever they had hanging off of them.
That's really unexpected, isn't it? You wouldn't expect that.
No, not at all. Alexander had the same thing happen when he went into India, you know. These big elephants and jazz, and that they lost that war, you know.
So there's this ancient basically it seems that Bulgaria survived everywhere that didn't survived things that everywhere else didn't survive, and all the secret societies and everything, they all slept over there when Atlantis started to crack up and you know everything was going wrong, and probably also in order to be secreted away from any other alien invaders who may opportunistically take over the Earth in the meantime, kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of that started up, you know, in the Bishigi Mountains in Romania, and even farther north than that, you know, with the Vikings, who, you know, are cousins to the Dacians and so forth. And there's no doubt that these people at one time came from space. You know, they were always very high. They always had very high technology, except for shortly after the Ice Age when they kind of had to start over, you know. So their weapons were a little more primitive, but they still had weapons. They still had different devices, you know. And some of these things are said to have still be inside the Bishigi Mountain, you know, these holograms and these things that their progenitors had, you know. So the farther back they went, they realized, you know, what the military industrial complex is highly interested in is ancient technology. And they went into those Bishigi Mountains, they went into Iraq, you know, and their interest was to find artifacts. Because the Nazis, they basically went from mainly in Germany. There's a small Nazi party, but in the United States, there's a huge Nazi party. They just call it different societies and whatnot. You know, there's the Rosicrucians, Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. There's, you know, the Freemasonry. It all stems from Nazi Germany in the beginning, and the Illuminati. You know. And
that's right. I mean, people say, oh, Adam Weishaupt and Bavaria. Bavaria? Hey, where's that? Germany. Okay, it's the same place. You know, it's not like the Illuminati, the Bavarian Illuminati or anything
different. Country, yeah.
Exactly. Meanwhile...
So this is the big, large tribe of people, basically, that are hiding their secrets, you know? Because they want to be in control and all this jazz. I don't agree with that. I think it's incredibly patriarchal. They forgot their goddess roots, as far as I can tell, or they've perverted them. You know, they worship the Virgin, but it's in a different light. You know what I mean? It's in a sacrificial light. So there's a lot of things that are from the old occult knowledge that they forgot the main rules of. They were supposed to do no harm, for one thing. They were never supposed to harm poor people. They're supposed to be socialist, you know. So there's a lot of these things that were incredibly perverted when Adolf Hitler came into power, and there was the Zionist aspect of that. That was the perversion of that. And it basically led to, well, we know, Holocaust and all this really ugly stuff, you know. Which the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church, was well aware of, and the files were open recently, and it states that they were aware and they turned a blind eye, you know, to what was going on there.
They actually supported.
They supported,
to be honest.
It, yes,
and
it made them money.
It's the same. It's the same. It's not like they were the ones who were doing it, but it was the same people controlling the Catholic Church as were controlling the Nazis. And
yeah,
so
they had their army do it. Yeah, they had their army steal everything from the Jewish community and in all of Europe.
That's right.
They stole everything from them.
So there's the, you know, so what is the problem here is that there are many societies. Now, some of them are very good and upstanding and positive and wishing the only the best for humanity. But it seems that in order for them to remain so, they had to become secret. And in becoming secret, they become, I don't know what the word is, infiltratable. They become a target to be infiltrated, and then there's more control. And the infiltration, and here's, I don't know if we should, let's go there, right?
Sure.
Why not?
Why not?
Let's go there, right? Because we now have to step out of our dimension. And we have to say that there are beings who are who dip into our dimension in order to feed on us and also to control us. And somehow we've been let in. They've been let in because they appear to be harmless. And they have taken over in a very... They're able to hide their way of thinking. Before you know it.
These are lower dimensional beings. They're incredibly materialistic. That's how you can tell. They're very materialistic. They have no sense of spirit, you know, whatsoever. Spirituality, this is their heaven. Earth is their heaven because they're materialistic, you know. So, these beings that they would call archons, you know, which they were deliberately... the portal was deliberately opened, you know, I guess during the days of Solomon, when they used the actual magic from Babylon that the Chaldean magi created to invoke these 72 spirits of the God Kings, you know. And that's what they were of, the God Kings, and they actually called them princes and generals and everything else. And a lot of Aleister Crowley's work, you know, who wanted to meet Hitler and was actually affiliated with the Thule Society, wanted to meet Hitler and all of this, and his whole get-up, you know, the Hermetic Order is based on Solomon's, you know, magic and the Kabbalah and all that.
That's very interesting. So the original invocation, so basically... We're talking about a hole in the protective layer of this planet.
Yes, the veil's been ripped open, yes.
That's right, and this is the same hole that was widened by the Nazi Bell and Project Rainbow.
Right.
And now, a few months...
Philadelphia experiment.
Exactly. Sorry, Philadelphia experiment. That's the Project Rainbow foot. But the whole... Now, according, I don't know if you are familiar with Sean David Morton's.
No, I'm not. All I'm probably familiar with his work, not his name.
All right. The book is called Sands of Time.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And it's the story... of a, I've got to really sum this up. It's 40 years in the, should play the advert. It's 40 years in the secret government. He starts out as a scientist and ends up as the guy who runs the government, the secret government, and all the industry and everything, because that's the problem, is the tear in space-time. That was created by the Philadelphia experiment and other time experiments. And this involves people like Fred Bell. Heard of Fred Bell?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Dr. Fred Bell, as they call him. And all these other people who have basically, they probably widened that hole, and probably CERN is a way of, like, throwing a foot in the door to try and keep it open. This is the kind of projection. So it's like they're inviting these beings through. And indeed... there must be what they call a forward party, party, and they're the ones who are calling them back in. So these are the problems that we have to face, and like the Kim Kardashian's ass is nothing. I mean, it's something, but it's nothing.
Yeah, these lower beings, you know, from the ancient days or ancient times, were invoked by sacrifice. Ritualistic sacrifice. And, you know, that was a common theme throughout all the modern religions. And they're all based on sacrifice. And it's not supposed to be that way. It is a complete perversion of Earth, you know. It's never been,
exactly.
Never was supposed to be that way.
Exactly.
And basically, you know, the real society and these esoteric societies were trying to bring back a more utopian idea because they understood what happened in ancient times. And there was a book called The Coming Race by Edward Litton. What the Nazis based this race-based type agenda on.
I've just downloaded it.
About a race of beings.
I'm going to read it for everybody. We read things.
Oh.
We read books for people here on Wall Street
Radio.
Wonderful. And I read Die Glocke. You can download it. You can listen to me reading this book with terrible German accents. All about the development of the bell. It was an account by the only remaining scientist who managed to escape using the secret tunnels of the castle that they were working in. Long story.
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh.
Yeah, so there's quite a lot of info in that pulls these things together. Now,
the German science or whatever, the technology wasn't all that great, you know. It was just initiating a development from extraterrestrial technology. That was all, you know, all of those base ideas and philosophies were taken to America, and they have since developed all of these things.
That's right, and that's what we've caught. That's first of all what has been called the military-industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
The upshot of that is that there are at least two or three secret space programs that have developed out of the industries.
Yes.
And that indeed that industry is now so focused on doing what it's doing. That living here on Earth is a kind of byproduct of
it is. It is a side effect. Just like ripping open time space for the Nazi bell was a side effect. You know, it was an unintended, but you know, cheerful side effect. You know, apparently that they adapted and they progressed on. You know. So, who knows how many holes in time-space they've ripped open, but I'm feeling it, you know?
Well, you see, this was the issue. In the Sands of Time thing, this was the issue that the lead character had been sent. Now, you'll be interested in this story. Had been sent to interview Hans Kammler, who had been arrested... by the Russians and Americans, and a joint Russian-American base was set up in the Arctic on a volcanic island using a Russian military, a Russian nuclear submarine as a power source.
That's correct. They also have new Schwaben...
Schwabenland.
Antarctica, yeah.
I'm learning how to do pronunciation now, German pronunciation.
Well, yeah, good. Thank you. I actually lived in Germany. I was married to a German woman, and we're not married anymore. But, you know, yes, I learned a lot of German while I was in the Army. You know, I was there during when the Iron Gate was up and the Iron Curtain or whatever, and I remember the wall coming down. This was around 1987 or 88, something like that.
Oh, that's right. My girlfriend comes from Berlin, and she said she went to the wall. She was like, oh, she was on there, you know, as soon as you could.
That's,
she was
that's
up there.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's wonderful. That was a nicer thing to look at, aside from the Czechoslovakian dudes, you know, with the weapons that were wanting to shoot. I guess people trying to get out. You know,
I mean, just imagine. Be standing there one day saying, yesterday I would have been shot, today I'm free. Today
imagine,
I can dance
imagine
here.
That. Yeah, imagine that. That is heavy.
So that's my girlfriend, right? She comes around. Anyway, meanwhile, we are here in the midst of a lot of activity that sort of almost has not a lot to do with us, but we suffer the effects of it. So we're in the middle of battles between several factions, one of which, at least, maybe not two, are the developments of these particular projects that we've been talking about, haven't they?
Yes, absolutely. There's all kinds of different projects that the United States Air Force is working on, you know, Lockheed Martin, Skunk Works, you know, all of these assorted contractors. And that's the ones we know about. There are ones that we don't know about, you know, that are working completely independent and don't even have a name, you know.
Yeah, and a lot of them have German names, like.
You know, yeah, so, 'cause they probably do, yeah.
And they probably have, still...
Have names like,
sorry.
They have, no, that's all right.
They probably
right.
still create the components that... You see, you can use something for several different reasons. You know, I've got a piece of technology that I've been playing with. It's called an Arduino. It's a... and I'm totally... don't get me started, right? But there are process controllers. And it's a little programmable brain that can respond. If this pin has got a voltage on it, do something about it. You know, and you can write a little program and set it up. And so I'm now creating them. I'm automating my home. So when I walk through to the kitchen, I can still hear you as you're speaking. Sound will follow me. And, you know, because I live on my own in a little cottage. But,
yeah, that's wonderful.
But the idea of this, you know, this is microelectronics that is available to people nowadays. But I'm seeing so many applications for this. How much, you know, this has now arrived. I would bet my bottom dollar that this has been around for about 40 years in the secret space program.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and how? What if you gave a couple of scientific and creative people a few of these to play with? You know.
Well, I think that would be wonderful. I think there's a lot of very talented people that are being completely neglected. You know, they are just as powerful as these people that are in the military industrial complex, or if not more creative, because they've had to suffer a life of poverty or whatever. And you know, their ingenuity is way beyond the tinkering. See, if these people, they have all of the toys, right? But they don't have the creativity. They have absolutely no idea where to go with that. What's the next step? They are completely dependent and reliant on ancient technology, extraterrestrial information, and actually light encoded information that comes from all of us. And we're posting our ideas on Facebook and everything, and they're taking them and implementing them.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, yeah. Let's. So. This is interesting, and this brings me to the one of my favorite films is Galaxy Quest.
Oh, wow.
Because it's such a laugh, but that there's a reality behind it, is that there are races, like you say, who can reverse engineer a million things, but they can't drive it. And
that's exactly right. That was the problem in Germany. They couldn't get a handle on the guidance system, you know?
Because you had to be bloody human.
Yes, you had to be human, for one thing. You had to have those extraterrestrial genetics, you know, to even respond to that kind of psychotronic, you know, implementation.
So, so many, that's amazing. So this is where Montauk comes in, and the experiments at Montauk. You want to talk about that?
Yes. Yeah, I can briefly discuss that. The Montauk experiment, you know, there was real technology being implemented there, and part of that front or whatever, they were taking children to experiment on because of their psychic abilities, you know. The thing is it was also a child prostitution ring. So yes. there were two things happening there. I believe Stuart Swerdlow was discussing some of that. You know.
Oh yeah, but, yeah, plenty. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a Facebook friend. You know. But yeah, they're said to be like a chair that they took from the Roswell crash and they couldn't manage to make it work or anything, so they were using these children to try and see what they could get them to do with the chair, you know, and a lot of different psychotropic things were happening, a lot of light encoded information where A.R. Borden, I believe, talked about the LERM light encoded reality matrix type stuff where they could just make a tin can appear, you know, a Coke can or something like that. That would be one of the things that they do not want humanity to know that they can do. That is one of the things, the side effects of that particular chair, which only enhanced their natural ability. So that's kind of trippy in itself, you know. Apparently they opened portals with it and some of these, what we used to call titans, came out of it, you know, like a big Bigfoot type character and other things. But these things were still not quite in our reality, but everyone around that chair could see it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. So, brilliant. Brilliant, and also completely scary, terrifying. Let's go back to 1963 in Berlin, because I've got some rare Beatles with them singing. What's this? They're two short ones, so I'm going to put them there. I Want to Hold Your Hand and She Loves You, but in German. Same Germans, long story. Welcome back. Welcome back to Wolf Spirit Radio. This is Ever Beyond. No, I got it around the wrong way. Anyway, who cares? We're having a whale of a time here. You know, we're booging away in the back of the cavern with a couple of beers and some Frau and some Liebfraumilch and Bitter.
Very jealous.
No, actually, I don't touch alcohol at all anymore.
That's great.
It makes me very, very, very ill, and yeast.
I drank a whole case of that stuff, and I spoke perfect German afterwards. And it was during when Germany won the World Cup in soccer, with Franz Beckenbauer.
All right.
Was the coach, you know? Oh yeah, excellent time.
So, meanwhile, back in, where are we now? Where do we go? So, because we've gone all over the place, we've talked about these extra dimensional creatures that are behind the Vatican, that are behind the Nazis, that are behind essentially everybody. Who's like evil. So let's go beyond the planet, which you intimated before that you're not psychically bound to the planet. Let's put it that way.
No, so absolutely not, no.
When you step outside of the planet and then you look down or you look back and you see all these secret space programs that some are secret from each other, and some know about the others, and we're only just starting to hear about more of them. But that it kind of makes sense. But when you know there are other races, and so we're taught, you know, that there's these Pleiadians, and then there's Sirians, and then there's Andromedans, and then there's Aldebaranians, and
Zeta Reticulans, and all look like. Yeah. Yep. They happen to all look like the real women.
Yeah. Funny that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is funny, isn't it? It is true that we come from a Nordic type of race from Syria, you know. The thing is about that, from the German propaganda, they had utopian ideas of a perfect, you know, race, or, you know, superior race or whatever. And, of course, you know, all tall, blonde-haired, blue-eyed people and whatnot. And that's pretty much the UFO propaganda that we saw in the 50s in the United States when they were flying German saucers around, especially, like, you know, Adam Adamski. Is it
George Adamski? Yeah,
George Adamski. Yeah, there were a few Georges. There was George Adamski, George King, and
yeah, I noticed that. Was that
George von Tessel? And they were all named George, right?
Yeah, and there's this guy George King. I only came across. I think you posted him. You must have posted the George King interview, which was a very, because they were half this very strange, received pronunciation men speaking in the 1959.
Yeah,
it was hilarious.
Yeah, they all have Disney hair, you know.
All slick and greasy and like, oh my God, don't you imagine touching that? And they must have smelled horrible, you know, cigarettes.
I can tell you what they smell like. Old Spice and, you know, this horrible aftershave, Stetson, Old Spice. Those were like some of the older
Old Spice
ones,
and know. Tobacco.
Yeah, and tobacco. Yeah, exactly. Pipe or, you know, cigars and, you know. But yeah, the Georges is what I call them, you know. They all formed UFO cults in the United States, and they were all put in the mainstream media, which to me is like ding ding ding, you know, it's propaganda stunt, you know. So this was all to get people UFO crazy so that they could do this fake UFO type invasion or whatever, to get people looking at the skies and you know, looking at the UFO thing and taking that seriously. And the thing is, an unexpected thing happened in 1947 during the Roswell crash. That was an actual spacecraft from out of our solar system, you know, and they didn't quite know what to do with that, because they had all this propaganda out there, which was quite fake, you know. They had stories of meeting their they all met Nordic aliens, you know. Later it was Billy Meyer. One of the new ones that they're doing is the Blue Avians, you know, which I call the Blue Aryans, because it's all the same crap, you know. Palladians, Aryans, and Nordic and all this jazz. So, of course, they're going to have the alien invasion of ETs that look like us so that they could fake that later. And that is something that they probably plan on doing, is faking a so-called alien invasion to have a reason for our insecure military, you know, to continue their affairs. And all of it is fake. And it is all propaganda to hide the technology that they're working on and developing to, basically either get off the planet or completely control us or whatever, the New World Order thing. I'm not sure. The agenda is so convoluted now that no one really cares. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's gotten so curled up in itself, just like a bullcrap, you see. And I was thinking today, wouldn't it be cool to have like the Golden Bullcrap Award for the most audacious and poorly planned and poorly executed false flag of the year, of the month? I mean, I think it's getting more and more. They're just rolling them all out, you know. And it's that same girl, the crying girl, you know, expert woman, you know.
Werner von Braun, you know, pretty much laid out their plan, their agenda, and it was later brought out by Carol Rosen of the Disclosure Project, one of Stephen Greer's people. And she said that, you know, basically that there would first be a Russian threat, which, yeah, we had that and all that crap and the Cold War and all the shit. And keep in mind, they're all friends, you know. So she went out to Russia and she found out that that's not true. And then, you know, that they were going to go with terrorists or whatever, and that's what they did with the 9/11 and all this jazz. And they actually attempted the asteroid threat, you know, with Congress and all that. Asteroids are coming, and God knows what that was that shot across Siberia, you know, but it killed a few people, or don't know how many. But these things, I believe, are all non-issues, really. You know, it seems like, you know, the whole false flag or whatever is just so that the military-industrial complex can continue to be in power and hide what they're doing because of their livelihoods or whatever the case may be. It's like cops making sure that there's plenty of drugs out there for people or whatever, you know. Make sure that there's plenty of crime. Otherwise, they don't have a job, you know.
Great mentality, huh?
Yeah, it's an incredible, I call it the military insecurity, you know, because that's what it is. It is an insecurity. There's nothing to do with security whatsoever when the people that have all the toys and all the resources, you know, are insecure. What do we do with that? You know what I mean? It's definitely not making us secure or any more secure. And I tried to tell them, you know, because I'm friends with some of them that are inside U.S. Air Force, you know, and NASA. And I told them that why don't they, you know, make a defensive type military and have these defensive type militaries around the world that practice diplomacy, and that way they can keep their toys and they can continue their secret projects and all this other crap, and people would look on them a bit higher, you know. It would be like kind of the mentality that people in the 50s had during World War II. They thought, yes, this is a really good cause, you know, that evil Hitler or whatever. So, you know, this is the type of mentality that's going to capture the hearts and minds of people all over the world, you know, as if we pull out, America pulls out all of their bases and all of this crap over in other countries and let those countries have their own, in fact, help them develop things, you know, have their own defenses, have their own militaries and their own tribes. And one of the problems is that Italy, way back when, you know, Constantine period, started dividing all of these people and all of these tribes. You know, they called them kings or whatever, but all they really were was the head of a tribe, of a family, literally. And, you know, especially like in old Germany, you know, in Frankish time period, before Prussia. And this particular time period, you know, were when the Catholic Church, with their New World religion, Christianity, came and they completely divided the whole world. And these are all the same people over in Europe. It's French people and German people and, you know, people from Denmark and these people were all from the same origins. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, because I mean, I was in Germany and I went to different countries and I'm like, well, you know, wait a minute, they just speak different languages, they're all the same, you know. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's a bit like you know, you come to Scotland and there's a different accent. I mean, it almost sounds indeed, if there is a what's called a dialect, Doric,
yes.
And you can, you feel like, you know. You know, and oh, like, yeah. What the hell did you just say? You know, and it's
and
like
Denmark. It's like Ikaskadik, you know.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it's a very it's we're the same people that are divided by, you know. I always joke with my American friends because we speak the same language. It sounds like we speak the same language.
It is all Germanic roots. It's like we have some words in, you know, in English or whatever, kindergarten and all these other words that came from Germanic roots. And surprisingly, a lot of familiar words. When I was in Germany learning German, I found that it was not that hard to learn, really, you know, for the most part, as far as phonetics go, you know, because the words kind of looked the same as English words. For the, you know, for the most part, except for the umlauts and all that jazz, and they all stem from this incredibly old language, the oldest language, which is Albanian and Illyrian, you know, which is said to be the Atlantean language, or the language of the stars.
Hang on a second, which do you want to run through the lineage of that just because you broke up a little bit, but there's a really interesting scene. Could you run through a lineage of those languages? Say, start from, well, who forms Atlantis and where did they come from and stuff like that?
Yes, absolutely. They're based on some of the work of Danziziano, Nicolae Danziziano in Romania, and Skender Hushi in Illyria. In Albania, rather. He came out, he's a linguist, and he came out with this breakdown of the languages, and Albanian is the oldest language. It's based on Illyrian, old Illyrian tribes, and these tribes are said to be the Atlanteans that came from the so-called Atlantis that Plato and Herodotus talked about. These languages came from the Black Sea, so it's safe to say that that the Black Sea was a big part of the survival of the people of Atlantis, people that came from High Brazil, so to speak, and different islands in the Atlantic that got overrun by floods or disaster. And you know, this was at a time before the Ice Age, and they survived that. They came ashore and migrated because of the Ice Age toward the Black Sea area. And a lot of them ended up around Turkey and Illyria and ancient Thracia and Istanbul. You know, so that it's amazing. The old flood story, the real one, the real flood story, the survivors of the Black Sea flood, which was a big flood that happened and came through and connected the seas for a while. And these people went up into the mountains of, I believe it's the Baris Mountains, that in the Bible that was called Ararat. And these people are the people that migrated down and actually founded Sumeria and Babylon. And that's where some of this why they say these specific languages all came from Sumeria, or that was the oldest. That is absolutely not true, and the Germans knew that. The oldest language is Albanian. Did you get all that?
Right.
Sorry, I just went to get a bit of a cucumber and to stoke the fire. So the oldest language is Albanian.
Yes. And the Germanic language and Latin and everything breaks off of Albanian.
Really?
Yes.
Now, what about cuneiform and the writing?
The old Albanian script looks pretty much like the old chicken scratch, you know, runes and all that jazz that you would expect to see. The cuneiform writing was absolutely based off of the Albanian writing. And it looks very much like hieroglyphs and all that. You can see how it came from that. Isn't that interesting?
That's very interesting. So, okay, so let's just, because there's, you know, I'm going to have a quick kind of mental rewrite here.
Sure.
The Sumerians and the, so you're saying, hang on a second. What's the progression from Albania to Sumeria, and how come who are these Aldebaranians who say they're Aldebaranians? I mean, who?
Okay,
the people. Fill us in, because you put some gaps there.
I can break that down. Yeah, basically these are migrants, you know, from the northest part of the world. You know, Hyperborea is what they used to call it in ancient times, and these were the ancient Dacians, not the medieval Dacians, the ancient Dacians and the ancient Greeks and the ancient Thracians and all of these ancient people. Now, these people, their technology was absolutely unbelievable, you know. Basically what happened was a disaster or a flood or something like that, and it had them migrating south toward Sumeria. And that's exactly what happened. You know, they are survivors of the Black Sea flood, or disasters from Atlantis during the ancient times. And these people came from the stars originally, you know, and they of course, when they inhabited the planet, they went underground at first, because it's not the norm, you know, to live on the surface of a planet. It's usually very volatile, you know. So they went underground and set up bases, and there are catacombs and everything all over the inner Earth that lead everywhere because of our progenitors. And these progenitors are said to have come out of the underworld. That's what they called the underworld back in ancient Dacian times. These were said to be the gods, you know, that came out of the earth, you know. I guess very brave men to have come out onto the surface of Earth, you know. They set up tribes and set up lands. And a lot of the cliff faces, you know, have very intricate carvings in that, around Baris and around these very high places in the Bishigi Mountains. There's tunnels and different caverns that look like, you know, they've been carved out and almost glass-like, you know. The Black Sea definitely flooded, and I that might have been an influx coming from the Atlantic Ocean all the way through the Aegean Sea into the Black Sea and then the Caspian, you know, and all that. Some of these people went up into the high grounds of Cappadocia. Cappadocia, some of them went to the Carpathian Mountains. So around the Black Sea is where they survived, and these people migrated. They're digging up like Göbekli Tepe and some of the older sites of when the survivors came and they set up their little towns and whatnot. Very very similar carvings to the Pictish stuff up in Scotland and some of the stones in Northern Ireland, you know. And you really get the feeling that they came from the north and they migrated south, you know, through Scandinavia. And there's records of the Scythians, you know, which they had dug up some mummies, you know, in East China with the Scythian mummies, and they have blonde hair, you know, or, you know, red hair and strange markings that are very similar to the Picts, you know. In fact, they're exactly the same, and even the style of clothing and whatnot. They wore Phrygian caps, and you see a lot of these Phrygian cap type statues in Rome of the ancient Dacians that were there. And so that is one of the secrets that the Freemasons and all these secret societies have kept, is our true origins. And, you know, Sumeria is a lot of propaganda. It's fairly modern propaganda, you know, come about by Sitchin and other scientists. Sumeria was set up by ancient Iranians and of course, people that migrated down from the Black Sea. And one of the ways you can tell is some of the pottery has like scorpion kings on it and some of these other things. Those are directly from the older cultures in Iran. And they're starting to dig things up from there too. That'll be the new place. They discovered a lot of these things in the city of Ur, you know. And I actually traced back based on some of the symbolism and some of the things that were important to the people that came there. They grew wheat and they grew. They actually had bison and they had dogs as pets and, you know, that were trained and all this, you know, and that is a very significant thing that comes from when they used to have a relationship with wolves in ancient Dacia and all that. So it all points to the survivors of the Black Sea as the oldest cultures. Sumeria was definitely not the oldest culture. Does that make sense?
It does. It's something that's been kind of, there's a gap in my mind. There is a hole in your mind.
Yes, that would be the gap that was in mind for a long time.
You know, the gap, right? Between Atlantis and Sumeria. It's like, what the hell's going on? Where is everybody? What happened to everybody? And everybody's going, oh, Ice Age.
No,
there's all this stuff is going on. So what happens?
A lot of civilizations rose and fell in between the time of Atlantis and the Ice Age, you know? But the Atlantis, the particular Atlantis that Herodotus and Plato was talking about was coming from the Black Sea. The Pillars of Hercules are Tracia and Istanbul, right there. And he's talking about the remnants. The only thing that's left around there is the island of Luz, or Snake Island, which was the temple of Apollo and the burial site of Achilles. That was very important to these ancient people, these heroes, and their god Apollo, you know. Yes. And, of course, what do they call the NASA space program? Apollo.
Da, 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 da. Actually, I have a... Oh, no, that's that one.
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. Why not?
Why not? Why not? Yeah.
You're listening.
So, yeah, there is a very esoteric side to all this, and it does go all the way back that far. It really does.
Well, you know, because there must have been people in Atlantis who, the Guardians of the Crystals, they were prescient. They knew what was going to happen, and they would have definitely made measures to preserve everything, and they would have had time in advance, and they would have done it in secret, and, you know, things would have happened, and probably... you know, everybody makes backups, don't they? You know?
Yeah, we are on Earth with several different species of beings, you know, that chose that particular life form to inhabit. You know, there is no superior race. We all come from space, and we've been even fighting out in space. You know, but the thing is that that is absolute nonsense. And if there's any kind of construct or some kind of social type technology that we could learn from is what happened during those ancient times. And initially when we came here, it was more important to get along and survive so that you could survive, you know. And we forgot that. We really did. And some very corrupt people made us forget all those things.
Very interesting. So you spoke about dogs.
Yes, dogs from wolves.
Exactly. And again, I go on about my girlfriend. She's got a husky, and sometimes he comes to stay here when she goes away. And he's very talkative. And it's like he's going, oh, this is happening. And I'm like, he's saying stuff. I just can't understand him.
Yeah,
that's all. He's like an Italian woman who's going, and I don't understand Italian, you know. And so I hear the sounds of language, but I'm not understanding.
Well, animals, especially wolves, were very important to our original progenitors, you know, that came up on the surface, because we watched them do things. We watched what they ate. We watched where they went. We watched we followed them to where the water was. You know, they were incredibly instrumental in our survival. You know, so we developed sort of a kinship to wolves and different things, different types of animals that were helpful in a way. Especially the group pack type animals, like in Africa. You know, that they have the gorillas, you know, which are very interesting to watch, because they know exactly where to go get the food, you know, and go get whatever they need in their environment. And so animals were completely part of our culture, and that's why the ancients, you know, depicted them almost godlike, you know, on their statuary and on their pillars, and they would draw pictures of lions and all these things. So, you know, that was why that happened, is because that they actually taught them how to live on Earth.
But then there are accounts of different races with different heads, but still humanoid.
Yes.
So there are, like, cat people, dog people, elephant people.
Yeah, with bird heads and
Hawk people. That's right. Chicken people. I think my mother was a chicken person. Is that, I've got these hens, and there's a red hen. My mum had red hair.
Yes.
Sometimes she bangs on the window. She looks. You look just like my mum.
Oh yeah, in the ancient Dacian literature, they had these beings in there. Of course, the Minotaur, and you know, and all these other, the one with the bull head and so forth. You know, I believe was somewhat of a metaphor for something. You know.
Actually, my feeling is that the Minotaur was a remnant of a genetic experiment.
Yes, that would have been.
That may have been a full early form of super soldier that was given some kind of longevity. You know, let's not make this one run out. What a good idea. What could go wrong?
What they called those were the Titans, you know. They called them Titans. And they were, beings, I guess they were doing experimentation in the underworld, or underground, you know. And these things were surfacing, and according to Stephen Quayle, he's seen actual beings, you know, come out of the earth and in Iraq, you know, and run around, big giant people, you know. There were Titans, and even the ancient polytheist people say these things, that there were Titans, and they gave them names, and you know, I believe there was a lot of progenitor experimentation going on to see how we could survive on this planet. You know, so they were taking bits and pieces of birds and fish and everything else to see how we could do. So you got mermaids and mermen and all kinds of jazz.
And they just get, you know, flushed down the toilet like the black goo. I love the story about the black goo. You have the story about the black goo.
There was actually a war with them that was in recorded in ancient times. A war with the Titans, and they lost. You know, apparently, but I believe that there's still remnants of that. You know, like there's some. There's a little town in Ireland where people are genetically growing tails, you know, in some kind of spina bifida disease. It's sort of a fallback to like growing a tail or something, you know. Uh-huh. And I think that there are those genetic remnants still in us, you know. It seems that way anyway. I live in Texas, and this is not where I should be living, you know. I'm very Irish. I'm light skinned, and the sun hurts me. I'll just say it.
You should live in Canada, mate.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Yeah.
See, already
we are thinking about that. Yeah.
Good. Yeah, we have friends in Canada here. Lots of people in lots of Canadian. It's really funny because to me, right, you're all on the same island, you know, and you guys, that's a Mexican there, and that's and they're illegal, and there's a Canadian there, and you know, they're weird, and you know, and there's this strange perception of like three people on this, like three people in the same boat talking about each other.
Oh yeah, I can tell you one of the ET races that is more of the etheric form that I've been in contact with. I call them Periquins, you know, they're kind of like the Harlequin type character. That's how they manifest on Earth or whatever. During Victorian times and also during the old French Carmen de l'Arte and the old courts and whatnot, they were the court jesters. They were these beings that were completely masked, and the Freemasons celebrate them in the Mardi Gras and all these parades and jazz, but this is a real etheric type being that you can't see otherwise. So when they come to Earth, they put on full clothing, and they're usually designated to. They're incredibly creative. They're usually people that work the stage in plays, and they gave us the arts and science and all of these other things, and they are one of the progenitor races, it's one of the beings that we actually are in spirit, you know, if that makes any sense. They're they have learned to embody, you know, after long trials of trial and error experimentation on Earth, to find the right vessel, you know, that they could possibly be in. But the ones that didn't choose to incarnate, you know, come here, that some of them live in a slightly different dimension on the moon. These are the ones that I actually saw when I was a child, and they taught me how to have an out-of-body experience during some physical trauma that I was having, some ritualistic trauma. And they took me out of my body and literally took me to the moon so that I didn't have to feel any pain. And what I saw there, you know, was the whole ride to the moon, you know, and this ship, and the walls seemed to disappear. And I said, well, where do I sit? It feels like I'm just like floating or something, you know. And they said, just sit. And they said, imagine that you're sitting. So I sat down on a chair, you know, and it was like an invisible chair. It was weird. But I was actually doing some kind of light-encoded reality matrix experiment just by doing that sort of thing, you know, like you can do in a dream. You can make things appear, you know. But I went to the moon, to this other dimensional place, and there were all these little beings, and they were running around, and they all had masks on. And the reason why they wore masks is because they were insecure. You know, they didn't have eyes, you know. And these particular beings were in sort of a half-assed incarnation in the spirit world, or how they imagined themselves or whatever. And I said, well, why are you wearing masks? You know, everyone is beautiful here. You know, you don't have to wear a mask. And they all took their masks off, you know, to show me who they are. And I was taken into this building by this very... incredibly beautiful woman, dark hair, almost oriental looking, you know, and she said that she was a moon goddess, you know, and very similar to the earth goddess Diana, Artemis, that sort of thing. So she took me into this building and told me that someday that I needed to do something very important to tell people what is going on Earth, you know. And to this day, I'm not really quite sure exactly what that is, but I'm trying, you know.
That's, well, as you're telling this, there is, you know, Dolly's saying, if you don't feel pain on the moon, I want to go there, bless her heart. And then yeah. Somebody's, now, Anon 5312, do you want to tell us who you are? Because just said, wow, had same ride.
Yes.
but it's, you know, they're Anon in the chat room, so we'll find out maybe who they are. But
okay.
Welcome.
Yeah,
don't feel. So, wow. So the moon. Yeah. I have seen a photograph that is supposedly one of these leaked photos, actually, several photos, and maybe even some video of who they call Princess of the Moon.
Mm-hmm.
And basically there was an enormous, and we're talking huge, crashed spaceship on the moon.
Yeah.
With
yeah,
this
the Mona Lisa character.
Yes.
Yeah, from the crashed ship.
Yes. When you said you spoke to this woman on the moon, that's, to me, that sounded like her.
You know, the face looks like that, yes. Really, except for very, very pale, you know, the one I saw.
All right. Well, you know.
But, yes, her face was very similar to that. You know, I think that crashed being, I think those videos are fake, but I don't think that they're maliciously fake. I think that the guy was just trying to tell the story without getting in trouble and getting other people in trouble. But this person that they took out of this crashed ship, they didn't take it out of the big cigar-shaped one, but there's an actual triangular-shaped one next to it, very large craft. And they went inside there, and they found all of these artifacts and this ancient pilot, you know. Apparently things don't decay on the moon, so they took her out of there and took her back to the United States, apparently, you know, in underground bases or whatever. But I believe the story, but I don't believe any of the pictures, that the Apollo 20 footage is fake. The video that he had, it was all fake, really.
If there was a fake, do you think there could have been an authentic somewhere?
Yes, I think the real deal exists, yes.
That would be interesting. Let's invoke that. Let's bring that into our reality and see if we can. Because we got about 20 minutes. Brett, it's been fantastic. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have, because, it's very rare that I can speak to somebody who's got such a clarity. All right, so let's go back.
Yeah, we're going to be great friends.
Yeah. Let me give you a nugget, right? This is a bit out of the book, okay?
Okay.
And it might join, you know, fill in a few blanks. At the same time that Otto Cerny was hiding in the secret tunnels in Gzias Castle. Gzias, I still can't pronounce that one. The leader of the project, Rudolf Seeger, and his now discovered to be an American spy girlfriend, Helga Wilhelm, mm-hmm. are also trying to escape General Sporenberg. Sporenberg has just interrogated and captured an American pilot who drove an advanced vehicle into the castle to try and rescue, an extraction. But he got captured.
Ah, okay.
And then they tortured him, and they discovered that she was there. So he told all about her. And but before they could get her, Rudolf Seeger, who was in love with her no matter what, even though she was American thing, because he was fed up by the Nazis by then, got hold of the bell itself.
Yes.
Cranked it up. Got inside it with her. It glowed blue. The green mist came. Lightning came. It disappeared.
Mm.
20 years later.
Right.
Kecksburg, Philadelphia.
Right.
Pennsylvania, not Philadelphia.
Yeah, I don't know if that's exactly true, or I think they just took the damn thing, you know, because cranking that up or whatever, it caused all kinds of EMF waves and radiation, you know, and a lot of scientists died just by starting that thing up. So I don't know about if they got inside of it. It's sort of strange. I believe it was used as some type of engine. I think I've even seen video of it flying around in North America, you know?
Mm. Well, this is the story given by this guy, and it's in the book, and I read it out. But it then ties up, because this guy, 20 years later, is in... he's a NASA worker, and...
Ah.
They knew about it. So he comes, and they've got this thing on, you know, they've taken it out of the, you know, dragged it off the lorry and put it into Edwards Air Force Base, and he's taken to Edwards. And
wow.
They're standing in the big hangar, and there it is, and, you know, sitting there, kind of smoking slightly, probably.
That could be true for all we know. You know.
And he says, I recognize this because... It was 20 years ago since he saw it, but when he was with it, it was every day. He was working on this machine every day, and he knew what it looked like. He knew the runes, he knew the whole picture. He didn't know what the runes meant, but he recognized the runes. He knew that this was the same thing that he was standing in front of. And then suddenly they hear this, and this iron sounding, clanking, and out steps the jackboot of Rudolf Seeger.
Oh, wow.
And they run towards each other. He embraces each other. You know, to Rudolf Seeger, it was just yesterday that he'd seen him, or earlier that day. But to Otto, it was 20 years.
That would have been very, yeah. Yeah, that's incredible. That would have been that, you know, that would have followed along the lines of the philosophy and of the propaganda of the Nordic beings coming out of the space saucers, you know.
Well, exactly. So here's the thing. I believe that this guy is a rogue time traveling Nazi.
Oh, wow.
So that's what my book's going to be about.
That's wonderful. That is a wonderful concept.
Because, it kind of presented itself to us. I've been working with Jessica Morocco, who's another host on the on the station, and we've had some very interesting connections. And she sees all sorts of things that come to her and speak to her and give her messages, and it's like little pieces of a big puzzle. And the Nazis and the Bell Project are right in the middle of it, because that's where the, you know, if Solomon had scratched, these guys had cut.
Yes. Yes, if anyone is interested in the book that I'm working on, it's digitalmoonbook.com, and it'll come out in the fall, or at least around November or something.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, excellent. Sorry about that, because yeah, I'm talking about my book. Yeah, but while we're talking about books...
No, that's fascinating. Yeah. I can't wait to read that.
So, let's... you know, we'll get together in the future, but we got about 6 minutes left, and I'd like you to just blatantly plug yourself, sir.
Oh, gosh.
You deserve it. It's been brilliant. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you. My website is digitalmoonbook.com, and I am writing a book called Digital Moon about my personal experience, my human experience with all of this lunar anomaly stuff. I was the founder of Lunar Anomaly Research Society on Facebook, and anyone can go there and join. It's a public service. There's a lot of information always being put on there. And I would love for people to follow me. You know, you can get an excerpt by going to digitalmoonbook.com and putting your email in there. It's simple as that. And I'll make sure that you, everyone that signs up, will get the information.
Excellent and awesome. Thank you so much. This is one of my, you know, there's lots of, everybody's got their little favorite. Anyway, let's talk a little bit more about the moon goddess, if you have any more about the things that she communicated with you.
Sure. One of the things that she communicated with me that I didn't quite understand, you know, at the time, she said that I had to go back because I wanted to stay. It was really beautiful there, you know. You could just imagine things and they would appear. You know, so you didn't really need for anything, and I was very happy as a child to be there. I don't know if I would feel the same way now, you know, but as a child I felt very, very happy to be there. It was like almost like a heaven for me, you know. It was per se the moon, but it was a different dimension of it, if that makes any sense. And she said that I would come back, you know, and that I had a job, specific job to do on Earth, and I'll know when I've done that job. It has to do with the moon, and it has to do with belief systems, very ancient belief systems. So these are things of points of interest that I've had all my life, and I'm just kind of plugging away at it. I'm getting very close to realizing some things, you know, about humanity and about the way things have gone, and many of the insecure, unnecessary things that we've gone through on Earth. And there's things that could very possibly change in a very good way. Not to say that a completely controlled New World Order would be the answer, or some kind of utopia, but some kind of balance in nature. and knowing who we are and appreciating differences and so forth. Knowing who we are is very important because we have very telepathic psychic abilities, you know. We have what would be called extraordinary abilities to people in the mainstream media or something like that. It would be something else. I think we have the ability to do telekinesis in a way, but I believe it's sort of an etheric thing. It's something that you see in the mind's eye. And so there are a lot of different things, avenues that I'm exploring about that experience and what she told me. But one of the things, the most important things that I learned is that we are an etheric type of being that is created and we can't be destroyed, you know? Because we're not dependent on physicality or material. That's of a lower type dimension where the Titans came from and our attempts to create or embody material on this planet. So that's one of the things that I figured out that I think everyone should know is that we come from extraordinary beings, you know, that are not of Earth necessarily, but some are of Earth, and some are from what our ancients used to call the goddess, you know, Diana or Artemis or something like that, the keeper of the Earth, you know, or the spirit of the Earth, Gaia, that sort of thing. I think there's quite the danger in trying to create a religion based on that or some kind of other hierarchical religion, like they're going to try to do. They've been trying to do that with the blue avian and the whole Palladian thing, and we all went through that, and it was dreamy, but the thing is, it's very hierarchical, and it's all about control, and we really need to get our brains out of that. The universe isn't about control, it's about creativity, you know?
That's brilliant. You know, as you're talking, I'm thinking, God, I could get this guy on for more than like 10 shows. How about we actually do shows that are limited to a topic? Like a progression.
That would be wonderful.
Like, you know, maybe a trilogy, let's say. Start with a trilogy and like the beginning, the middle, and how it could end.
Okay.
Maybe do it like once a month or something like that. Give you enough time if you need to prepare, but we'll do that.
That would be wonderful. I speak mostly from human experience, so I have nothing to prepare.
Ah, cool. And that was the feeling that I got from you. You know, I thought, well, I could get this guy on, and we'll just rock it. You know, we'll just rock it straight away, right off the ball. So, and that's indeed
really
what happened.
I enjoyed it.
It's really flowed. There's a lot of consciousness that you've kind of. It's a bit like vacuuming the floor to get all the bits off, so you can see what's underneath, and now we can see the pattern of the carpet.
Yes, absolutely.
And discerning this is that, you know, nice and sweepy, a good sweep. Brett Colin Shepherd, we'll have you back. Thank you so much. Digitalmoon.com. No, Digital Moon?
Yep, digitalmoon.com. Digitalmoonbook.com.
Oh, Digital Moon, I knew it. Digitalmoonbook.com. That's right. No, yes. That's the right one. So,
this has been wonderful, Jay.
Thank you. It's been. It's interesting you're talking about belief systems, right? Because one of the things in my show, the beginning of my show, it says, be prepared to leave your belief systems behind. I think we've left it far behind tonight. Let's hope that everybody can, you know, get with this information and assimilate the ideas that this, you know, there's a lot that we already knew, but there's stuff that we've been told that is deliberately wrong. And if we can sweep that away to see what is true underneath, we can get an idea of what is really behind the matrix.
Yes, we can absolutely feel what is true. You know, it's easy to see what's false. It's easy to feel that. Yeah.
Excellent. And again, it says, you know, clearing our emotions so that we can feel again. So thank you very much. This has been Ever Beyond on Wolf Spirit Radio.